Work and Accurate Billing, Lee Heating and Cooling, serving Sheridan and the Bighorns.
Wyoming wasn't built overnight. It was built by people who worked hard, stayed true to their values, and thought about the next generation. This is Frank Boley, and we think the same way at Legacy Ridge Private Wealth in Sheridan. We help individuals, families, and businesses build a financial plan designed to last. Visit us at 45 North Main next to Frackleton's. Legacy Ridge Private Wealth, building a legacy that matters. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA, SIPC.
Many people don't sleep well on their existing mattress. If you're one of those people, you really need to visit Mountain Mattress Company. We have something for every style of sleep with the largest selection of mattresses in Sheridan. Mountain Mattress is your local dealer for Tempur-Pedic, Stearns & Foster, Helix, and Sealy Posturepedic. Come see for yourself what we have to offer and experience better sleep with help from Mountain Mattress Company, 226 North Main in Sheridan.
This public service announcement brought to you by Atlas Chiropractic. Your healing begins when you pick up the phone.
Sheridan County Sportsman's Association is hosting a Project Appleseed Rifle Marksmanship Clinic on April 25th and 26th. Fun for the whole family. Learn rifle marksmanship and about our heritage and the events that happened the day the Revolutionary War began. Register online at www.appleseedinfo.org. That's www.appleseedinfo.org.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Monday, April 20th, from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. And this morning, we're joined by Sheridan Memorial Hospital Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Sierra Gross, and Chief Operating Officer, Joe Wright. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Now, Doc, I ask everybody this. And it's something that I think really helps those out in the audience who are aspiring. What made you want to go into the medical field? Usually there's an event or there's a mentor, there's somebody, there's something. What was yours?
Yeah, there was multiple events, but I would say the point that was the most influential was during my childhood. I am the oldest of four, and my youngest brother, who was three at the time, was diagnosed with childhood leukemia. We went through 5 years of constant treatments, travel. We lived in a rural town in small town Nevada and had to drive 4 hours to California to a big tertiary center, sometimes three times a week or more, and stay there and get care as a family. And trying to navigate that and seeing how well the care was received, but then how much we relied on local resources was pretty impactful. And I knew from that moment on, I wanted to be in medicine. I wanted to give back to smaller communities. And in what realm that looked like, those were multiple things along my path. But
wow. So yeah. It basically laid out not only just that you wanted to be in medicine, mm-hmm. but where you wanted to be in that field.
Yeah, I knew I wanted to make an impact, and I knew I didn't want to be in a big city forever. I'm really grateful for all the experiences I've had in my studies along the way, including bigger tertiary centers and getting a grasp for what that entailed and where that's useful, but knew that I wanted to get back to small town.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, when it came to going into the medical field, there's a lot of specialties and there's a lot of different branches on that tree that you can climb up. Is there one that you specifically look for? Is there one that you wanted to do or really geared for, but maybe changed along the way?
It definitely changed along the way. I started out, of course, thinking that oncology was the route I would end up going. In the midst of medical school and pharmacology and the fast pace of where hemonc world was going, I realized it maybe wasn't for me. And then pivoted for a while that thinking I wanted to do surgery. until I spent the tireless hours in the OR, and that is all you do. And though I enjoyed it and I had some of my best mentors that were surgeons, I also realized I needed to be in the office more with my patients and having that connection. And that's when I matched in internal medicine and did my training up at Billings Clinic. And at that point knew, yep, this is where I'm going to make a difference and be professionally satisfied, having a wide breadth of knowledge in multiple factors and being able to have not only the relationship in the office with your patients, but in the field that I'm in, you also build pretty tight relationships with your specialty colleagues as well, and are part of a pretty cohesive team. And that's where I knew this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Because no offense to that field, but yeah, as a surgeon, you do kind of lose that relationship with the patients, whether it be just because you're so dang busy all the time. Now, don't get me wrong. I've had surgery, had to go in, do the consult, and sit with the surgeon, and suddenly, I don't know what it is, if they're trained or if they're just mystical, and they're like, you trust me. The minute they walk in the room, they looked at it. I was like, you know what? Yeah, I do. I really, really do. But that connection on the day-to-day, let's sit down and really discuss your health, is kind of lost a little bit because of that specialty, isn't it?
Yeah, our surgeons are amazing. I would let them do surgery on me in a heartbeat. And because they do have something about them that allows them to really dig in deep to our patients' stories. But again, they're excellent at surgery and we want them to be doing surgery. So we, in internal medicine and family medicine and really the primary route of medicine in the clinic, enjoy getting to learn about more holistically our patients and how that's attributing to their health and what do we need to do to make things better.
And in a rural area, that usually means family on top of it, doesn't it? I'm not just taking care of you. I'm taking care of your father, your grandfather, maybe your children. So, I mean, it's a real connection, kind of the old, you know, and I've talked with Sheridan Memorial Hospital about this many times, but it's kind of like the old carriage doctors, you know. My dad still tells stories about his. He had a grandmother who never moved out of a chair. And so when it was time for her to see the doctor came to her. And he said, sure enough, he had an old carriage that he would ride out there with his bag, and he'd go in and talk to grandma figure out what's going on. But I mean, that's real connection.
Yeah.
And I feel like within this industry, a lot of people may have felt that, boy, I lost that. And around here, I'm really glad that Sheridan Memorial really does put an emphasis on that. They see the value in that. Now, what inspired you to take on the role of chief medical officer?
Yeah, I didn't go into medicine thinking that that was the route I would end up being. But I am really fortunate that is where I am today. Coming to Sheridan and having a great relationship with my colleagues here, quickly realized that it was not only important to take care of my patients, but also to take care of my colleagues. And hearing just the pressures of the healthcare industry and what that impact is having on physicians and limiting their ability to be with patients and limiting their ability to have the time to learn them. As we talked about how important that is, especially knowing our community and having that trust relationship with your physicians and seeing that they were taking work home and seeing that they were missing kids' games. It was really a point where I was like, I think I need to step up and ensure that we help keep them healthy so that they can have a sustainable career and they're satisfied and that they get back to the root of why they went into medicine. And it was a great challenge of learning how to flip the switch, still in a healthcare role, but with a different focus and a different lens of not just serving my patients, but serving the hospital, serving my physician colleagues and everyone that I work with there to ensure that we can keep this hospital going and for many years to come.
You know, it's good to know that there's somebody behind the scenes taking care of them. You know, it's like being on a flight when the mask comes down, put it on the you first, and then address anybody else around you. We got to take care of the doctors too. Mm-hmm. They got to be able to go out there and see him at a baseball game or a family event. They're part of the community. They're a huge part of the community. And as you said, being able to get out there, get to know your patients in a different realm, you know, really see it with their own eyes and experience it themselves. Joe, I'm going to switch over here to you. Healthcare administration. Is that something that somebody sits around and goes, you know what? This is where I'm going, and this is what I'm going to do.
Boy, I sure hope not.
So what is it where are you originally from?
I grew up in Montana.
Montana. Yep. Was that also like a rural community, or were you closer to the cities?
No, it was outside of Billings and Laurel.
Now, when it comes to healthcare administration, what got you into this career path?
Yeah, I've been at the hospital for about 3 years now. I've had several people ask me who goes into healthcare after COVID.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
But I think for me, going back before that, I was on the foundation board. I was on the hospital board, and I had a opportunity to see how important the hospital is to our community, and it really aligns with, I guess, who I am and what's important to me, and that's serving a mission that is really important to our community.
What was it that you did before you took on these duties?
Yeah, I worked at Kennan Products, so they're a small engineering and manufacturing company here in town.
So is a lot of your duties, literally the day-to-day crossing T's, dot those I's, type of work?
Yeah, I would say the similarities, 80% of it's very familiar when it comes down to people and processes. Certainly the other 20%, when you're dealing with just the medical aspects, it's been a large learning curve for me. Fortunately, I'm surrounded by a lot of good people that help along the way, and I've definitely learned a lot in the last few years.
It's like the professionalism makes everything so much easier when it comes to administrative duties. And so in a typical day, what would you say is your highest responsibility, the one thing that you want to make sure gets done today?
The cadence of my day, typically, you know, I call it rounding, but getting around to the different areas. People are very important to me, so I have like a list of birthdays and anniversaries, and I get around to, you know, just talk to people and see, you know, what challenges they have. Getting to know people is really important to me. And then really aside from that is just aligning, you know, what's going on day to day with where we're going and what our vision is.
Now, what kind of experience is needed to get this type of position? Because, you know, I'm sitting here saying, well, does anybody ever actually explore going into it? Essentially, this is management. This is an area, you know, you might not have your go in there and be looking at the patient, but at the same time, you are a key component of the operation of a hospital on a day-to-day basis. There are people behind those scenes that we're not seeing. There are people out there going, how do I get into that field? How do I get into that hospital? What are the experiences that you had that led you to that position?
Yeah, I've had a lot of great experiences, had a lot of good mentors in my life. I think early on, somebody pulled me aside and really just said, you got to surround yourself with good people. And it really starts with the people. So that's why it's always been really important to me to get to know people. And then having worked at Kennan, where it's a small business where you're responsible for, at least at that time, about 60 families and their livelihoods. And you understand just the components that go into running a business and cash flow. And so I think those two areas specifically have been very valuable in my, I guess, maturation to get to this point.
And so a lot of what the doctor was talking about, where it's sure, we can call it management, but it's care. It's care for the doctors. It's care for the nurses. It's care for the custodians, the cooks, all of it. It's management of the people and making sure that they're taken care of, essentially, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And also just having a voice, and if they have questions, and understanding that as decisions are made, especially for people that are on the front line. I think it's really important that they're engaged in those decisions because they're the ones doing the work, and giving them that voice, I think, is really important.
Is that something that you learned at Kennan where you're like, look, the employees here have got to have a seat at this table?
Yeah, Kennan was definitely a big part of that. Kennan's an employee-owned company. So as part of that, the fact that everybody's in it together and, you know, they have a vested interest on how, you know, things operate and the success of the business, that definitely was a important piece for me just to, you know, gain collaboration and, really work with the people.
And I can understand that Sheridan Media is the same way.
Yes, you are.
We have
ESOP.
Yep. That way that everybody gets a say in what actually happens around here.
Yes.
And you have a vested interest in your company. You want the company to succeed. And at the same time, you know you've got somebody who's there to take care of you as well. Yep. Now, we're going to talk about some leadership and some big changes coming up. I got to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more with Sheridan Memorial Hospital. When we come back, you're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE at 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Marin, everyone keeps asking, are rates ever going to help buyers?
Actually, yes. I'm Marin Borsheim.
And I'm Nicole Pierce with First Federal Bank and Trust.
Our mortgage rate relief program may lower your mortgage rate up to 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed rate mortgage.
That can make a big difference in monthly payments.
If you're buying your primary home, you may qualify.
Funds are limited, so call us today or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Let's get you into your home. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The Communist Chinese Party has a Wyoming politician in their pockets, and his name is China Chuck Gray. As Wyoming Secretary of State, China Chuck gave business licenses to 56 Chinese companies. For years, China's been stealing American jobs. China Chuck has given the Red Communists a foothold in Wyoming. It's documented. China Chuck Gray rolled out the red carpet for 56 Chinese-owned businesses. When you crack open the fortune cookie, it reads Chuck Gray is China's best friend. Wyoming conservatives just can't trust China Chuck Gray. We need an America First Trump conservative. Reed Raisner is a job-creating businessman and a rock-solid conservative Republican. In Congress, Reed Raisner will fight alongside President Trump to stop China from stealing American jobs. Reed Raisner will stand up for American workers.
I'm Reed Raisner, candidate for Congress, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Reed Raisner for Wyoming.
If you think it's time to find a better employment situation than the one you currently have, plan on joining us as we broadcast live from the Career Network Fair Wednesday, April 29th from 11 to 1 in the Sheridan College Golden Dome. Employers will be available to discuss various opportunities available and to answer any questions you might have. The Career Fair, April 29th, sponsored by Sheridan College, the Sheridan VA, and Wyoming Workforce Services.
Okay, Saturdays in Sheridan just got more useful. Synergy Shop and Minion's open house is every Saturday from 11 to 2 with serious shop space for your RV, boat, trailer, and business. Big doors and high ceilings for lifts or storage. Come walk through, take a look, and see what you can do with it. Donna Garland with Sheridan Realty Associates built and designed these units, and she'll be on site to open every door and answer every question. Synergy Shop and Minion's on East Rich Roads just past Coca-Cola.
Lace up for the Sheridan Rec District's Autism Awareness and Acceptance 5K and 1 mile run walk on Saturday, April 25th at Thorn Rider Park. The 5K starts at 9 a.m. and the 1 mile at 9:15. Support REACH, helping those affected by autism in Sheridan County. You can sign up online now by going to the events page at SheridanRecreation.com or sign up at 8:30 on Saturday. Join us for the Autism Awareness and Acceptance Run Walk Saturday, April 25th.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. We're sitting with Sheridan Memorial Hospital Chief Medical Officer Dr. Sierra Gross and Chief Operating Officer Joe Wright. Okay, it's been on a lot of minds lately.
I've heard I've seen a lot of rumblings. What is a critical access designation, and how is it different than the current designation that Sheridan Memorial has? I'll give it to either one of you.
So currently we are what's known as a prospective payment system hospital, otherwise known as a PPS. There are 30 acute care hospitals in our state. 8 of them are PPS hospitals. I think what's unique about us is that the other 7 reside in the bottom third as far as the youngest populations, as far as counties go in the state. We're kind of the lone outlier in regards to being in the top third of the oldest populations within the state. But essentially what a PPS hospital is fee for service. So essentially if you present to our hospital based off of whatever that diagnosis is, we get a set fee based off of that from Medicare. And then we're charged to delivering the service in the most efficient manner with the best quality and the best patient experience.
You know, when it comes to bills and designations and acronyms, the billing department knows, and I don't know if they love them, but do you guys know those acronyms very well? To the layman, we're kind of hands up in the air.
It wasn't that long ago I was one of those people with my hands up in the air. Yep, but no, it's pretty well understood within our walls. But conversely, as far as a critical access hospital, it's called a cost reimbursement model. So in that model, there's no fixed fee. It's basically the cost for us to directly provide service to that patient. We would get reimbursed 100% of that cost plus 1%. Whereas in today's world, under the PPS model for Medicare population, we only get roughly about 75% of what it costs us to provide that service.
Okay. So that's essentially the problem that Sheridan Memorial Hospital is trying to solve by switching over its designation.
Yeah, it's really challenging for any rural community hospital that lacks volume to really make up for the difference and get to a break even with the Medicare population.
Costs in the medical field seem like they go one direction, and that's up. So when it comes to the average Medicare individual walking through your door, based upon diagnosis, you're getting 75% of the cost back.
Yeah, hospital-wide.
Hospital-wide.
Yep, that's...
So I found this on your FAQ. How is the shift from 40% to 67% government payers impacted the hospital financially? Because that, I guess that's really what we're looking at here. How do we at least break even, right?
Yeah, we want to really sustain what we've built over the last 20 years and all the services that we provide to ensure that people get care locally. And, you know, you had mentioned the dramatic shift in our, really the age of our population. So if I was to go back 15 years ago, our percent of people that are 65 and over was less than 16%, whereas today it's about 25%. So the numbers that you had just mentioned going from 40% to 67% as far as the governmental insured, which is primarily Medicare, is a dramatic shift. And the easiest way to think about it is about 29% of our patients are commercially insured, which are the only group of patients that we have that reimburse us at a level that's more than what it costs to serve.
Okay, so essentially, the older the population gets in the area, the less reimbursement the hospital's getting. If it's Medicaid, or Medicare, excuse me.
Yeah, really, both Medicare and Medicaid. But as far as critical access goes, it's specific to Medicare that we're talking about. And again, going back to my comment earlier, with the other 7 PPS hospitals in our state, they're able to maintain and provide their services, but they have a dramatically different payer mix than we do.
So changing the designation, what does it mean by just simply I mean, these are more than just words, right? When we change the designation, what is going to change from my perspective, from your patient's perspective? And let's go younger. Let's say someone my age. You know, I'm 46 years old. I'm wandering into the hospital. How is wandering into a critical access different than, excuse the phrase, normal one?
Essentially nothing. There's going to be really no difference. I'll take a step back and just kind of how we got to this point even to start this discussion today. We, as an organization, you know, 20 years ago, started looking at with a mission and vision to how do we keep care local for our community in with the best standards and the highest quality and excellent patient-centered focus. And so with that, we, over the last 2 years, have really built a very robust medical staff with physicians, diverse physicians and APPs to give a numerous amount of services. In 2006, we were at 5 different services. You could get emergency services. It was orthopedics in town, pediatrics, a couple of primary care, and a general surgeon. And that was it. Everything else you had to travel out. So over the last few decades, we've been able to build and invest in rheumatology, for example, where there's 2 rheumatologists here, 3 in the state. We've been able to build the Welch Cancer Center, where people can get care here locally and not travel at a time when it's the most vulnerable for them. We have 5 obstetrician gynecologists where we know in Wyoming, we're living in a state where there's OB deserts, and we're currently getting patients coming from Casper because of limited access.
Holy cow.
All the way up here. And so with all of that, you know, and what we aimed to build 20 years ago, we believe we're in a point where we have achieved that. And now evolving with the unique demographics of our community with a high Medicare predominant population, we're just looking at ways that we can continue to grow with our community, but also sustain it and protect it and ensure that we can keep all those services and sustain it for many years to come. So now, fast forward, we're looking at ways where we're just trying to improve what we get reimbursed from Medicare for the cost that we deliver, and knowing that this could be an option to allow that to happen and to help us sustain all our other services. Because this affects Medicare as far as how they reimburse, therefore, there's really not going to be any change to our young 47-year-old who walks in, like you mentioned. They're going to get all the same services we currently provide and not see any effects or changes.
So when was this decision ultimately reached by the administration?
It's been something every year that we explore just to ensure we are constantly looking at our budget. We're constantly looking at the healthcare environment, the pressures of the fixed payers. Most costs are determined by Medicare and Medicaid. And so we're constantly evaluating that and our service lines and the needs of our community. And I think we saw a really big hit during our pandemic, having to ensure that we keep our doors open, we kept all of our staff whole, we took patients from everywhere, feeling the crunch of what it was doing around us regionally. Mm-hmm. And with that, we had to, we took 15% loss and had to start tapping into some of our savings to ensure that we can continue to do everything we do every day. And since then, it's been really hard to be able to make that up and allow at least the opportunity to reinvest in our people and in reinvest in our facilities and reinvest for the ever-changing, fast adapting technology of healthcare. And so we are just looking at ways that we can ensure a break-even point to be able to start reinvesting and growing and protecting.
So what I'm hearing, Doc, we're not going to be removing any services. We're not going to be removing any doctors. We're not going to be removing any wing. Correct?
Absolutely. Correct.
So whereas before I could just get everything taken care of right here in Sheridan, now with this switchover, it's more administrative. It doesn't mean that I'm going to have to go to Billings for this now. It doesn't mean that I'm going to have to go over to Casper for that now. It just means we're going to be billing things differently, correct?
Yeah, it's. I would say it's the exact opposite of kind of the things that you were saying. It allows us to continue to do what we're doing today and grow from there. And as far as the billing perspective, it's all the only demographic that it impacts would be the Medicare. And there is some slight billing. And really, it just requires Medicare to reimburse us the cost to serve.
Now, Joe, were you there when that 15% loss hit? And were you the guy who had to present it to everybody and say, look, guys, we took it on the chin on this one?
Yeah, I wasn't employed there. I was on the board at that time. And Dr. Gross obviously was on the medical staff as well. And it just came down to we had people to protect and keep whole. And that was the decision that was made.
So that's what happened. Essentially, they said, how do we survive in this new environment that we're seeing pop up around here and continue with like the Grow For You campaign, things like that, to provide those services, maybe even expand in the future. But first, we got to get our heads above water.
Yeah, absolutely. And serve the community that we have.
Yeah. I think a lot of people were worried when they saw this announcement, because this did come out a little while ago. How long does a transition like this take, Joe?
Yeah, so right now we're going through the process of talking to our employees, also doing community forums. We've done a couple community forums. We've got in front of about 400 of our employees, and we continue to do that. We have two more forums this week for the community, one tonight at 5:30 at the hospital, one tomorrow night at 5:30 at the hospital. After all of the information and really just getting out in front of people, we still need to get in front of our board in order for them to approve us potentially pursuing this. At which point in time we get past all of that and we decide that this is something that we think fits us and we want to continue to move forward, we'd have to submit a letter to the state. And then the fastest it could go from there would be 90 days.
So we're not there yet.
Correct.
This is an exploration. This is an information campaign, you can say, in a way. Joe, you and your team been crunching some numbers, I would imagine, over the past, what, 3-4 months?
Yeah, we've been looking at this for almost, as far as in-depth analysis, for the last year.
Wow. So you're the guy who walks in with all the information and says, okay, here's the reason behind the change.
Yeah, financially, I would say our CFO has been doing the bulk of that. And we did get a third party involved to basically come in and do their own analysis. And then we combined both analysis just to see if we were correct in what our assumptions were. And we were right in line with what they came up with.
And that's fantastic. Not that my opinion matters, but having a third party step in, absolutely critical when you're looking at huge problems like this. So I can get an outside perspective. What's not that I don't trust my own people, but what's really going on? Is there anything they don't want me to know? You know,
right.
Not that they're hiding anything, but they're maybe just nervous where it's like, oh my goodness, man, we're really just living on the edge here. Doc, mm-hmm. When it comes to employees, when it comes to the people who are working for the hospital, you guys are really gearing up all these talks, all these meetings, really wanting your employees to know what's going on. Why? How will this affect them?
Yeah, like Joe mentioned, the effect will be the opportunity for us to be able to reinvest in them and to be able to grow. But, you know, we wanted to get ahead of this in regards to just ensuring, like you mentioned, information campaign and really empower our employees with information to understand what this means so they can partner with us and help us if this is the way we end up going, ensure that this is a smooth transition and that we're all communicating the same thing, that this is really for us to be able to keep doing what we're doing for our patients and to be able to reinvest. So, you know, what we see this, if this is the way that we're able to continue to move forward and to sustain our current hospital and model with all of our services, we'll have to grow for example, our home health services. So if a patient is kind of ready to go home from discharge, but yet may need a few extra things, we need to ensure that when the physician says, yeah, they're ready to go from the hospital, that we can immediately pick up extra assistance from the home health side. And so, and there's many more examples, but ultimately what we see the impact being is a positive one for our employees to be able to help us grow, keep their jobs, keep all the service lines, and make this place even better. But we wanted to make sure that that's, they understood that and they understood the need. Superficially, when you just look at critical access online, you see these very vague thresholds, and they're kind of easy to misinterpret, like most things that you see on CMS in regards to it's gray. And so we did our homework, we investigated thoroughly, and we wanted to empower and inform and educate our employees.
Because there are requirements that you now have to meet that you didn't have to before to maintain this designation, correct? I kind of want to talk about those in the last section, but was there a rub or a pinch anywhere that came across your desk when you're looking, either one of you, where you're looking at the numbers and you're saying, man, to meet this designation, we're going to have to do this, guys. And I don't know if I like that. Was for either one of you, did you see anything like that?
I think the one that was the most obvious up front was this designation. In order to meet the threshold, you have to maintain 25 or less inpatient status beds. But there's a lot of nuance into what that means. And so at first, when seeing that, it's like, we need to dive in. Is this something that meets what we expect to be able to provide for our patients? And after being able to understand more what that designation and definition is, we and aligning it with our data of what we currently do every day over the last 5 years, we feel very comfortable that those thresholds are achievable, and we've been doing it.
Okay, so this, you're not really having to change any practice.
No.
Joe, was there anything that you saw?
No, I think there's really only a small list of eligibility criteria as it pertains to critical access, and Dr. Gross hit on the one that was probably the one that we need to look the most closely at. And
the one everybody winced.
Yeah, and I think just understanding the nuances that go into what all of that means, because we have a lot of patients within our facility that don't qualify as inpatient status, yet we see them every single day. For example, if you come in and get a knee replacement, a lot of times people are leaving the same day. However, sometimes they may stay an extra day or two for observation. That does not count. So, I mean, none of that changes moving forward under a critical access.
All right. And on that, I got to take another quick commercial break. We're going to have more with our Sheridan Memorial Hospital right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Hi, I'm Maren Borsheim.
And Nicole Pierce with First Federal Bank and Trust.
Right now, qualified homebuyers may receive a mortgage rate up to 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
Yes, through the Mortgage Rate Relief Program.
It's designed to make buying your primary residence easier and more affordable.
We'll personally help you check eligibility and guide you through the process.
Call First Federal Bank and Trust for all the details or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust, because your home should be within reach. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
If you're unhappy with your current employment situation or thinking you want to spring forward into a better job than the one you have now, plan to attend the Career Network Fair, Wednesday, April 29th from 11 to 4 at the Sheridan College Golden Dome. Employers will be on hand to answer any questions you may have. The Career Network Fair is sponsored by Sheridan College, the Sheridan VA, and Wyoming Workforce Services. Find your new career at the Career Network Fair, 11 to 4, April 29th at the Sheridan College Golden Dome.
Looking for a place that has something for everyone? Smith Alley Brewing, right in downtown Sheridan, combines great food, quality drinks, and family-friendly fun. Kids can enjoy the arcade, you can challenge friends at the pool table, and catch every big play on their giant 70-inch and 90-inch TVs. Savor their new menu and family-friendly pricing in a welcoming, comfortable space for the whole family. Visit Smith Valley Brewing in downtown Sheridan. It's right up your alley.
It's the final week of Mossholder's Living Room Upholstery Sale. Give your space a fresh look for spring with a new sectional, accent chairs, or relax in a new reclining sofa and love seat. All Living Room Upholstery receives discounts, so you can find your favorite items in stock or order in the pieces that fit your lifestyle best. If you need help customizing your piece, our talented staff will help choose the fabrics or leathers that best complement your space. Hurry in as Mossholder's Living Room Upholstery Sale ends this Saturday. Mossholder's, furniture is our passion.
Hi, this is Chris Hayden here at your locally owned Sheridan Motors. As summer travel season rolls in, now is the perfect time to make sure your vehicle is road trip ready. Our factory trained technicians provide high quality service at fair, honest prices, so you can hit the road with confidence. We even offer convenient local pickup and delivery, plus every service includes a free car wash. Stop by or give us a call today and let Sheridan Motors help you get ready for wherever summer takes you.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting, and our guests this morning are Sheridan Memorial Hospital Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Sierra Gross, and our Chief Operating Officer, Joe Wright. All right, we're discussing the hospital's exploration of critical access designation. We've gotten a couple emails here at Sheridan Media about some concerns that people have within the community, and the doc and Joe both want to make sure that everybody's concerns are addressed as we go forward. So there are some things that I've heard from the community. Doc, Joe, is there anything that you've heard from the community about the concerns about changing this designation?
One thing that we have heard is that, oh, you're going to have to limit how many patients you see, and you're going to have to start transferring patients outside the community, and we're no longer going to be able to keep care local. And I would say this opportunity of changing the reimbursement is absolutely the opposite to all of those fears. And in fact, you know, we kind of left it talking a little bit about the threshold of the 25 inpatient status beds. And I think that's where some of this concern or fear is wrapped around. But when we break it down a little bit, and all of this is defined by CMS, and what it typically, they define multiple beds. So they have an inpatient status, which would be the patient that, you know, needs the ICU level of care and those services that go with that.
I'm going to be there for a while.
Yes, correct. There's also a designation status called observation. So a patient, goes through the ER with chest pain and they're having an active heart attack. They need to go utilize our cath lab, get some interventions, stay the night for observation, and go home. That does not count towards those inpatient beds. And we can continue to do so. There's also, you know, another designation that they define as an extended recovery or an surgery in an outpatient bed. So what that means, our patients, Joe briefly mentioned, you know, a knee replacement. Well, you know, 20 years ago, a total knee replacement was an inpatient service. It required inpatient stay. Now, most of them are done in surgery centers as an outpatient and go home the same day. Which therefore we're seeing Medicare kind of shifting some of that reimbursement towards outpatient. We're seeing the numbers of inpatient services, at least what they define as inpatient services, starting to trend down. But another example,
because now they know,
yeah,
you're going home,
right?
I don't have to put all this money forth for you to sit in the hospital for the next 3 days,
right? And we have an excellent spine surgeon. We can do spine surgery here locally, and those patients may need to be observed overnight. That does not count towards inpatient status, and we can keep doing that. We're also seeing in that shift, you know, even 20 years ago, we were predominantly inpatients. Our volumes were predominantly inpatient. Now we're seeing over 60% of the care we deliver is in an outpatient setting. And that's a national trend. That's not specific to Sheridan Memorial Hospital. But all of that to say that, you know, 25 inpatient status bed at first glance seems limiting. But when we polled all our numbers since 2019, doing everything we do today and not changing anything, our averages are anywhere from 18 to 20. So we're already under that threshold. When you break out those different delineations of observation and extended recovery and mom and baby at delivery. So really where we live is under that threshold already.
So this is literally why you kind of said at the beginning, we're already doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We were already doing this. This is more kind of shifting over to Joe and his department to make sure that, hey, do the numbers check? Is the average this? Okay, fantastic. Can you do this on the in the paperwork realm and make this designation go forward? So, Joe, you guys are pretty much doing the kind of the soldier's work on this one, huh?
Yeah, it's like Dr. Gross said, we already reside 99% of the time within the parameters that we would need to. And there's some other areas that we would have to bolster up just to ensure that we continue to be under the 25 threshold. But yeah, without doing anything different, it's pretty reassuring the numbers that we've seen.
So, Doc, when we look at the numbers, when we look at the practice that's been going on for years, is there anything that you want the community to know, hey, this is going to change or this isn't? Because our hospital just invested so much time and effort in that TCU unit.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, we had reassurances from the hospital for over a year, maybe even two. You're going to be able to recover here at home.
Yeah.
That's not going anywhere, right?
TCU staying. Where it's delivered may change. So I'm glad you brought that up. That has been questions that we've been hearing in the community. And to explain, part of that data that we did to look at where our thresholds are for inpatient status does not include our TCU patients. Why? So the CMS deems that those transitional care unit patients are labeled as what we call a swing bed. That's kind of how they define them in the government insured payer world. Swing beds do count towards the 25 inpatient status beds. Doing what we do every day with, you know, taking that portion of the data out, we are living around 18 to 20. So we can keep taking care of ICU, keep taking care of moms and babies, keep taking care of our cath lab patients. But we didn't want the 20 beds of the TCU, those swing bed data patients, to throw off the ability to continue doing that other bulk of the inpatient level care. One thing we knew, though, is that we absolutely wanted to maintain and will maintain the TCU or the, you know, skilled nursing facility level of care. So what we did was started investigating what's common practice out there around the country. And, you know, the TCU, as we call it, in a lot of other places are actually off-site. They're standalones. They're not necessarily at the hospital, or they may partner with a long-term care facility. And then that way there's smooth transition for patients to go from acute care to, you know, maybe short-term rehabilitation like our TCU with a goal of getting home. But a few of the patients that home, it maybe isn't an option, we can transition them to the long-term care facility. So it's, you know, there's different models of how this can look. And so when we started looking at that and seeing how that plays out, there's opportunity for us to be able to move our transitional care unit off site and not necessarily in the hospital so that we can continue to deliver the same amount of care at that level of care without it impacting that 25 inpatient status.
Okay. Now I'm running out of time with you, but it has been explored that the Sheridan Greenhouse may end up being exactly what you're talking about. The new TCU, I guess, and you can say. And the old TCU, I would imagine, is going to be absorbed by the hospital for other services. I mean, room is room is room. I've got about 2 minutes left. So one thing that I do want folks to know, Joe, you said there's going to be other meetings, other public meetings. Can you, are there going to be other public meetings?
Yeah, we have one tonight at the hospital, conference rooms A and B, which is right across from the cafeteria. So that's at 5:30. And then again, tomorrow night, 5:30, same place at the hospital.
Fantastic. If someone wanted to do a little bit of research, they want to be armed when they walk in there and have the information in front of them so that they can ask good, informed questions, is there a place I can go and maybe get like an FAQ or some sort of fact sheet?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go on our website. We have our frequently asked questions on there. So a lot of the stuff that we've talked about today and a lot of the questions that we keep getting from our community are on there.
All right. Fantastic. And if anyone wanted to field a question after or before, is there someone that they can email up at the hospital?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, you know, anybody in administration is willing to have a conversation. And on the FAQ questions themselves, there's a spot there which it says if you have questions that you can contact.
All right. Fantastic. Doc, Joe, thank you both so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on the show this morning and really discuss something that has been on the community's mind for a little while. I really do appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, Floyd.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE at 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
First home, feeling overwhelmed?
I'm Maren Borsheim.
And I'm Nicole Pierce with First Federal Bank and Trust.
Our mortgage rate relief program may lower your mortgage rate up to 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed rate mortgage.
That could mean hundreds saved every month.
If you meet income guidelines, you may qualify to buy your primary residence.
Let's make it simple.
Call us or visit efirstfederal.bank today for all the details.
First Federal Bank and Trust. We're with you every step home. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, this is Kayla Carr with Sheridan Honda. Are you road trip ready? Take advantage of our spring service special and get more for your money this travel season. Save $150 on our spring car care package that includes an oil change, engine and cabin air filters, new wiper blades, and a four-wheel alignment. Enjoy the freedom to get up and go with confidence all season at Sheridan Honda. Call or go online to schedule today at Sheridan Honda in Power Sports.
Hi, I'm Kurt Lair, and I'm excited to tell you that I've joined the Midas team here in Sheridan. When's the last time your vehicle had a checkup? Midas does it all. Brakes, alignments, oil changes, suspension, AC service, tires, batteries, check engine diagnostics, and full routine maintenance. Basically, if it's part of your vehicle, we can fix it and save you some money doing it. Save $80 on tires right now, and you can get free wiper blades with any premium oil change. Make Midas your one-stop shop. Midas Tire and Auto in Sheridan.
At Sheridan Memorial Hospital, our focus has always been providing excellent, patient-centered care close to home. As healthcare and our community evolves, we are exploring a critical access hospital designation to help strengthen our ability to continue serving this community for years to come. Join us for community forums April 20th and April 21st at 5:30 p.m. at Sheridan Memorial Hospital in Conference Room A and B just inside the cafeteria entrance. Your hospital, your community, your care. Learn more at SheridanHospital.org.
Doug, quick question.
That worries me already.
How many broken lawn chairs will fit in the back of your truck?
How many do you got?
A pile.
Jeez, Bob.
And there's a trampoline and something I think used to be a grill.
Congratulations, Bob. You're exactly why we have Trees for Trash.
Saturday, May 2nd. Bring all that stuff to the city landfill on East Ridge Road between 9 and 2.
Absolutely, and you'll get a free mountain ash seedling courtesy of Landon's Greenhouse.
So trade all your trash for a tree, Doug.
Bob, I'm loading up the truck right now.
That tree has no idea what it's replacing either.
It's all about keeping Sheridan and Sheridan County beautiful, so let's rally around Trees for Trash. And it's completely free.
I love free. I love trees. I do not love this trampoline, though.
Saturday, May 2nd, 9 to 2. Trees for Trash.
I'm bringing everything but the kitchen sink, Doug.
Please don't bring the kitchen sink.
Too late, man. Big thanks to our partners, Waring Chevrolet, U.S. Bank, Landon's Greenhouse and Nursery, Sheridan County, and the City of Sheridan. We'll see you Saturday, May 2nd, 9 to 2. Trees for Trash.
Have you been thinking about getting a pet? This is Mandy Koltiska with Century 21 BHJ inviting you to take the Which Shelter Pet Should You Adopt quiz. The answer you get will feature an animal that's currently up for adoption at the dog and cat shelter. Take the quiz now and you'll be entered for a chance to win $200 in chamber bucks.
Which shelter pet should you adopt? Take the quiz at SheridanMedia.com, presented by Mandy Koltiska at Century 21 BHJ Realty.